The way that your mouth, like, the shape that it formed was so fascinating. Do it again.
I don't know what I did.
I don't know. No, like, made this, like, kind of pinched diamond. It was just so pure and so diamond-shaped.
Are you a good witch or a bad bitch?
I've been a rebel all my life.
We will not remain hidden figures. We have names.
Oh, if it's naughty to rouge your lips, shake your shoulders, shake your hips, and let a lady confess I want to be best.
I didn't kid you, did I? Well, now you know.
Should we do a weird sound?
Yeah.
Your regularly scheduled broadcast.
Programming to give you this special message. Announcement. Message? Who knows?
Oh, one of those two.
Hey guys, we wanted to add a quick little addendum here because we've had a few listeners write in response, and we fucking love it, to our last episode by going, Tammy Duckworth wasn't born in America. So she's not eligible to be president. First of all, that was kind of the point of the name of the episode. We knew it would be minorly controversial. But the crux of the reason for wanting to do this addendum is that it's actually up for debate because the Constitution defines people being eligible for president as, quote, natural born citizens of the United States. And what that exactly means is definitely up for scholarly debate.
But I think the general consensus, at least in the past, when we've seen this with other presidential nominees, is that if you are born to an American citizen, you are considered generally a natural-born American citizen.
You are an American citizen from day one of your birth. Now, some more conservative, and I don't mean conservative politically, just conservative in the true sense of the word, conservative interpretations of that are that only people born on U.S. soil, born in America, are considered eligible. And, I mean,
yeah,
that is certainly one way to view it, but then at the same time you start entering interesting areas when you think about the fact that John McCain was born in Panama. So, but like, right. Nobody questioned.
And he was allowed to run for president.
He was allowed to run for president. Hannah found this great quote that I think kind of encapsulates all of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, because there have been questions from other people about whether or not Tammy Duckworth can run for president.
Yeah.
So there are, this question is all over Google and there are answers all over Google. And this one, this was just like a random guy answering on Quora. He said his name is Mark Sheldon, born and raised in the United States. I don't know what his qualifications are other than that.
Right. But let's listen to what Mark Sheldon has to say. He makes interesting points.
Yeah. He makes some really interesting points. He says, since her father was a U.S. citizen, yes, she's a natural born citizen. As the child of a U.S. citizen, she is natural born as required by the Constitution. This is why the Obama birther nonsense was so crazy. There was absolutely no reason for anyone to lie because even had he been born in Kenya, he would be eligible to serve as president.
Because one of his parents was American.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, I don't think the Supreme Court has ever ruled on the matter, but McCain and Ted Cruz were both born to U.S. citizens outside the U.S.
That's right, Ted Cruz as well.
This means that even conservative Republicans accept that having a U.S. citizen as a parent is enough for men who appear white. Marco Rubio was born in the U.S., but his parents were not U.S. citizens. This makes him a U.S. citizen at birth, too. There were objections to his candidacy as well, but generally the court seemed to be on the side of reason here. Therefore, he is eligible.
Right. So basically, the only real argument to be had is one that's rooted in racism and sexism.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, the listeners who brought it up made a good point that if she were to try and put in a bid for the presidency, it certainly would be a factor and, of course, would be brought up consistently. But I think the fact that her father, served in the U.S. military. And I mean, he wasn't serving in the military at the time that they were in Thailand, but his work in the military was had led him to why he was out of the country.
Right.
You know what I mean? Served in the U.S. military. She had an American father and graduated from high school in the United States, you know, graduated from college. Yeah. You know, all this, she's lived most of her life in the United States and has an American parent. That's the point. From day one, the day she was born, she was an American citizen. She didn't, that was never in question.
Right.
Because her dad is American.
Yep.
Was American.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, for the same reason that people have no trouble accepting that that's the case for Ted Cruz and McCain and.
And maybe the same people who would bring up. The questions about Tammy would do the same for Ted Cruz, but again, that
like the, yeah,
but likely not.
Obama was subject to the fucking birther bullshit forever and ever and ever. And Tammy, I guarantee you, she would be subject to similar things. But I think the people who ultimately have the final say will come to the same conclusions that they came to for John McCain and for Ted Cruz. You know what I mean?
I mean, depending. I mean, we'll have to see how the Supreme Court rules out.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that there's precedent. There's already legal precedent. So I think it would be weird for them to be like, oh, well, we said it was cool for them, but we're not going to say it's cool for her. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's already precedent for it to be fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that...
We just wanted to add that on there because we didn't address it.
Yes.
And I think it's actually super cool that we have people engaged enough with the podcast to have things to say about it.
Yeah.
And I like that we're able to kind of
say
again.
Yeah.
So for people who maybe didn't know that there could be potential questions about her candidacy if she were to choose to try and run for president.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And now those people do know.
Yeah, it's funny because it wasn't even really a thing that I questioned. It didn't really occur to me
until I started doing more research, and I didn't really think to bring it up when we taped. But it's a good thing to talk about and tack on real quick before we get you back to your regularly scheduled Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Yes, I do want to say one thing before we leave this addendum. Because I forgot to mention it last time, but one of our listeners sent me, his name is Keith, he sent me some resources, which I thought were really awesome for archival, like newspapers and open access source material.
Nice.
So at some point I will likely be going through that and, you know, finding some weird little newspaper clips. But he did point out a few that I want to read in some of the next episodes. So thank you, Keith, for sending that. And I'm sorry I didn't mention it last time, but it's much appreciated. And, that's it for me.
Let's get you on to your regular stuff, your regular goodness.
This ends.
Your special announcement. Beep, 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 beep. Hey, Hannah, what's up?
Not much. I'm drinking my beer. Cheers. Hell yeah.
Your watermelon session ale.
Yeah.
From Montauk. It's a pretty It's the fuzz.
We got some activity on my street.
5-0!
Boop, boop, boop. Boop, boop, boop.
Also, for people who don't necessarily stay to the very end, would you mind giving us a rate and a review?
Yeah.
That's going to help us monumentally getting more momentum going. I know I have a ton of friends who listen to this who have not done this. Cough, cough, hint, hint. All you got to do is go and say 5 stars. Or, you know, if you don't think as much. Which you should. This is becoming just me yelling at my friends.
I mean, you should
just say great show. Like, that's all you have to say in the review.
The point is, rate, review, it helps us.
Subscribe if you feel so inclined.
Yes, please.
We love having subscribers. Yeah. We get more every week.
We get more every week. And watching the number go up makes us happy.
Yep. And then sometimes it goes down because we have bots.
Don't tell them that.
You can cut that. Yeah, if you're already listening every week anyway and you haven't subscribed, hitting that subscribe button will do wonders for our specs.
Mm-hmm.
And help us out.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep, yep.
Yep, yep, yep. All right. Good morning.
Hey.
Welcome to Good Witches, Bad Bitches. Did we do that already?
No, we haven't. Welcome to the... Why do I sing the same way every time? It's the same fucking dumb song that I made up because I'm not creative enough to come up with a good song.
No, you know what? Maybe that should be our new opening.
Welcome to our show.
I mean, it could work.
That's Hannah Ferguson.
That's Deanna Greif.
What up?
What up?
We're here talking about ladies.
We're here with beer talking about ladies. Actually,
we're here. We're queer with beer.
We're here. We're queer with beer.
Get used to it.
And we'll put it on a t-shirt someday. And then you can buy it. But yeah, speaking of like all of that sort of nebulously, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, that was very Canadian of me, about, Jesus, some stuff.
Not a
that,
real Canadian.
I know, which, but I had a Canadian accent for like at least a year after I got home, and I am very proud of that.
I think
it went away, but.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
Okay.
Let's complain.
So I want to complain. Well, also I'm,
it's fascinating.
Know. It's fascinating. I'm like perpetually terrified by a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
I just finished watching the first season of The Handmaid's Tale.
Finally.
Yeah, I don't know that I will continue. I don't know that I'll keep going. Sidebar, the director said some weird shit in an interview that made me go, I don't know that they're making this show for the right reasons, and it kind of ooks me out. Basically, that he cast a younger Serena Joy. So, like, in the book,
yeah, she's older.
Serena Joy is older
and
in the
so
show.
And so is the commander.
And so is the commander. And in the show, they cast younger people, and he did that because he wanted to, like, create a jealous tension between Offred and Serena Joy. And then at the end of this interview, he said, also, couldn't you just see the two of them in a cage match? And I was really grossed out by it. Anyway, that's not what I want to rant about, but it just sort of like, it made me.
I mean, that's a weird thing to say. I kind of get sort of, but he would,
but
what
he's
getting
what
at,
is.
But yeah, no, he's,
you know, like you're making a show about women being subjugated and raped on a monthly basis. And then that's like what you say about their characters anyway. But the reason I was thinking about it is like, I watched it and I was thinking a lot about it and how just freaky that is, but how, you know, in The Handmaid's Tale, they're living in this world where women aren't really able to have children. And so that kind of makes me feel better as a viewer because I'm like, okay, we don't have that problem. Like, we
right.
don't have this fertility problem. So the scenario that they've set up in this show isn't, you know, is a little far off because we aren't dealing with that.
Yeah, right. There's still some fantasy element to it, even
yeah.
though it, the core of it is still very frightening.
Exactly. But then I started seeing all of these think pieces, for lack of a better fucking term, about how if we would just, basically, if we would just force women to have sex with men who are quote-unquote incels.
Involuntarily celibate.
Involuntarily celibate. Then we would be preventing all of the violence that we are currently experiencing, a la school shootings and mass murders.
Yeah, that's not how that works, but nice try.
Yeah, well, and the reason they're saying that is because, for example, the most recent one, which was just a couple of days ago in Santa Fe,
in Texas.
In Texas. Oh,
Santa Fe High School.
Santa Fe High School, thank you.
Mm-hmm, but it was in Texas.
Texas. The kid was like, there was a girl he liked, and she didn't like him back, and he spurred his affection, so he went on a fucking rampage. And all of these think pieces are like, well, if we had just fucking, I guess, forced that girl to have sex with him, then none of this would have happened.
What?
I don't know. Anyway, so one of those pieces is called The Redistribution of Sex.
Yeah, which is an incel term.
Uh-huh.
They want to have socialist sort of ideals applied to sexuality as if sexuality is sort of like a commodity. Sex is a commodity.
Yeah.
Where a la, like, wealth.
Right.
Like, redistribution of wealth, but now they're talking about redistribution of sex. Like, that's not... What?
Well, and they're also talking about it almost as if it's a human right. Like, healthcare...
I'm sorry.
Healthcare is not a human right, but men are owed sex. Like, they have a right to sex.
With beautiful women.
With beautiful
women. You're neglecting
women.
That. Because that's the thing. Anybody can have sex if you connect with a person, even if you don't connect with a person. No matter how, what you look like, there will be someone who will have sex with you willingly. But their standards are like, I deserve sex from really hot women. No uggos, no fatties. I'm like, well, yeah, then that's why. Or maybe you could just try being nice.
Yeah.
Maybe you could try not being an asshole. What is it that they call when men are nice to women? They even when the men aren't incels, they call it white knighting because they think that they're faking it.
Yeah.
That they're just being nice to women so they can get sex, that it's not coming from a real place, which to me says a lot about these men.
Mm-hmm.
That they're only nice to women because they're trying to, it's literally putting nice coins into a slot machine then they expect sex to come out.
Yep. Yep.
Which is insane.
It's really fucked up. And then I discovered Jordan Peterson.
Tell me.
Do you know, have you heard that name at all?
Yes, but I'm not an expert.
I had not heard his name until yesterday. I was kind of like, I was exploring all of this stuff, discovering it all for the first time, and it really
horrifying,
just,
isn't it?
Yeah, it really fucked with my head. But he is somebody who has millions of YouTube subscribers. He goes all over the place and lectures to full lecture halls. People stand outside his lectures when he's done for hours just to talk to him and, like, get his autograph. And they spend hundreds of dollars on Skype sessions with him, basically so he can act as their therapist, but really so he can affirm their
bullshit
men's rights beliefs. And he he has this fucking empire, and he is touting this idea, this thing that he calls enforced monogamy, where basically you arrange marriages and you enforce that monogamy so that these men won't, you know, they'll keep getting sex, and so they won't go out and be violent because they have sex available to them all the time.
What?
Women are not factored, the way women feel is not factored into this concept at all, but I don't think he even realizes or thinks about any of that.
Also, do they not know that there are countries right now that have arranged marriages, that are enforced monogamy, that have that exact thing going on, that still have a lot of violence? That, like, literally, that is happening in the world right now, and it's not working at all.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know. But in his perfect world, that wouldn't happen because you know, how women feel doesn't matter because it's the men who are violent. It's the men who are acting out.
Yes,
and
true.
And so, which is very true, but that's not a women's problem. And that's what
it's
he's
not
saying.
Women's fault.
Yeah, he's also saying that that's the problem, is that women are not, they're not providing.
Also, what, I mean, I guess, are there, this is a random question, are there gay incels?
I don't know. I mean, I have to assume.
I mean, of course, but I'm just saying, like, do they kind of gravitate toward that community? My guess would be that it's a slightly different situation because that community very specifically blames women for their problems.
Yeah.
And gay men who aren't getting laid.
God, that's a good question. I actually
don't have that
know.
Same issue.
That's really fascinating.
I don't know.
No,
that literally
idea.
Just came out. I was like, well, wait, what do they do? Who do they blame?
Maybe in his mind, gay people don't exist.
Well,
who knows?
I'm sure.
If it's a choice, then,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, gay
so
people aren't allowed
believe.
In Handmaid's Tale either, so.
Right.
Hmm.
Gender traitors.
What does that mean?
Ugh. It just grosses me out. Anyway, I kind of wanted to rant about that.
Well, and how they, God, I don't even know the guy's name. I read about it all the time, and I don't think he's worth investigating his name at this point. But the guy who went and tried to shoot up a sorority or whatever, and he ended up killing a few people, and they basically canonized him in the community, and they call him a saint, and they call him, like, the ultimate gentleman. And I'm like, yeah, the ultimate gentleman who goes and kills women. That
mm-hmm.
sounds right. Yeah, sure, of course.
Yeah.
But what the fuck, man? It makes me so mad
because
I mean, I know it's unfortunate to feel like you're not wanted. Of course, that's a terrible feeling. But instead of, like, why get angry and feel like
it's not just about that.
There's no sense of self-responsibility of, like, it will be like, well, I'm fucking ugly, so. And it's like, that has nothing to do with it. You might think you're ugly, and you might well be ugly, but the thing is that, like, you thinking that you're unattractive does not mean that you are.
Right.
And you're certainly, and I say again, there will be somebody who finds you attractive, no matter what you look like.
Yeah.
Probability-wise, that's how it works.
Yeah. But even if they don't, and this is just entertaining that concept, there is such a thing as natural selection. There is not, the way we live right now is very unique because we've sort of halted natural selection in a lot of ways, but
it's changing.
It's changing a lot, but this concept of every male has a right to sex is not a genetic truth. It's not a genetic reality. Most mammals, not all male mammals have sex and mate and carry on their fucking lines.
Not all female mammals do either.
Not all female mammals do either. But we have developed this idea that, men are entitled to that as a human right. And that's just really not fucking biologically true.
No.
I'm sorry. That's just not how it has ever worked before. And all of a sudden, it doesn't just work like that now. But there's this fucking gross concept that the way it was in the 1950s was so much better, and really that's what we want to go back to. And it's
also, nobody was happy in that time.
Not even men!
That's what I'm saying.
I know! That's what's crazy, is it's like, men weren't happy. Men were fucking miserable.
Well,
they couldn't say it.
But that's the thing, is that nobody could talk about their problems, but had, shiny family photos and, their private personal turmoil. And that shit happens today, too. People curate the shit out of their lives on Instagram and on Facebook. I mean, it's only the weird oversharers that are like, I had a really bad day, blah, blah, blah. It's only when, sometimes people post about significant, trauma sometimes when they're opening up. But usually, people want to show how great their life is going. And that fodders a sort of, sense of when I'm looking through everybody's great life and I'm like, oh, well, what the fuck's going on with my life? That's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same in the 50s. It's the same now. You looked at a person's beautiful house and their four kids and their great car. And you're like, well, they're the perfect family. They've got it going on. And my family's all full of drama and bullshit. And it's like, everybody's always been that way. Yeah. It's just the nature of the human condition.
But what are the differences now? Women have more rights now.
Women have more rights, and men have a lot of access to massively deadly weapons.
Yeah. I mean, I think the real fucking fundamental issue here is that women are fighting for things, and we still don't have equality.
No.
But we are fighting for that much in a much bigger way than we were outwardly in the 50s.
Right. And we certainly are much more fortunate now than we were back then.
We can say fuck on this podcast, and if somebody
we can say something like we're queer, we have beer. And be okay. We know that we're not going to be ostracized within our own communities.
Right.
For saying something so just silly, but
Yeah. But if fucking Jordan Peterson got his way, it would be The Handmaid's Tale. That's what we have. That's how we would be living.
Enforced monogamy. What the fuck? And of course, it's only enforced with women, right?
Of course.
Men can go out and fuck whoever they want.
I think the idea is that men pick.
Oh, God, it's the Dark Ages in his mind.
Yeah, of course. Because men are the superior sex, and therefore, blah, blah, blah.
I just can't believe. I mean, it's interesting that this backlash is sort of back and it's mainstream again because of the fact that women are getting more vocal about it and getting more. And the thing is that men of course have a massive struggle in banging their heads up against patriarchy because gender roles are just as specific for them as they are for women, except for they just categorically have more rights and a little bit more freedom within that.
Yeah.
But they're just as trapped in that bullshit.
Right. We've talked about that multiple times.
Yeah. And so, but it's just interesting that it always, for them, their brains are so wired to be like, it's feminism's fault. That's one of the things when I do hashtags on Instagram for this podcast, and I do hashtag feminism, that the number two thing that pops up, it's hashtag feminism, and beneath that is hashtag feminism is cancer.
What?
Yeah. that's a popular hashtag on Instagram. And it just is crazy that that's what.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
It really is fucking mind-boggling. But if this guy has a million subscribers and he makes $80,000 a month in donations from these people, then that shit makes sense.
He has a platform, you know?
He has a platform.
And it's interesting that, you know, some people who might be amenable to having a conversation about, like, actually, this is fucked up, and let me tell you why, in the way that social media works today, they get validated in their fucked up beliefs, and they find a community that feeds that.
Yep.
And then that only serves as it's a horrible spiral where they just feel validated in a belief that maybe if they had spoken to somebody early on, it wouldn't have become so entrenched.
Yeah.
And now they just refuse to listen.
Yep.
And be like, well, no, let's have an ethical, philosophical conversation about what rights are.
Yeah. Right.
Liberalism in the truest sense of its creation in philosophy and in politics, which is about individual liberty.
Yeah.
Which is very important. And how individual liberty for yourself, as long as it does not infringe upon another being,
mm-hmm.
that's what's important. And you having a right to sex is not, you're infringing on someone else's right to bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
And
but we aren't supposed to have rights.
But
and
that's insane.
That's the insane part, is it's like our rights aren't meaningful. They don't exist in
because
their
we're
rights.
Lesser beings.
We are lesser beings. We belong in the, you know, scope of whatever the man in our life deems appropriate.
I just feel sometimes like I'm so fortunate in so many ways that, like, generally speaking, you know, I haven't had any deep philosophical conversations about feminism with certain members of my family because I would like to preserve that relationship. And
yeah.
I know that that's like a delicate line to tread when your family has problematic stuff. But like my close family and my male friends generally are all so I feel like I'm in a little bubble because I'm not constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, and like you and I both are fortunate enough that our male partners are also very feminist.
Yes.
Which is really great.
Yeah.
But it makes it.
I know. It's really, it means that this stuff surprises me so deeply and disgusts me so deeply, but that there are people who I probably know and know well who are like, I mean, maybe he has a point. You know what I mean? Like, and that really boggles my mind.
Well, and again, like the people, I'm speaking to the people who maybe start off a little bit more moderately and then kind of get drawn into bullshit, is that their frustration comes from a real place.
Yeah.
And they are people.
Mm-hmm.
They go down this rabbit hole that makes them hateful and angry and illogical. And it's all based off emotion.
Well, and the future is scary, right? But the past is something that they see, that they can quantify. And like you said, like you can look at pictures of the 1950s and see how happy everybody was. And there's, you know, sparkles and the lady was in the kitchen and the man went to work and it was so wonderful. But that's not reality.
No.
And that was never reality.
No. I think that men can be kind of lost at this point.
Right.
Because it's like, well, if women have redefined what they want and who they get to be, men have to do the same thing, but they
right.
haven't had that yet.
Yeah.
And they're just starting to realize. And then so, you know, part, like a small group is going, well, no.
That is such a good point. That redefinition.
Because we're way ahead of them on
that. Yeah. But the people who have always had historically the most privilege are the ones who are most, you know, stubborn about giving it up.
Of course. I would be too.
Yeah.
I get that.
It's interesting.
Be like, yeah, it's great. I mean, like, I experience privilege in that I am white.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think, you know, Louis C.K., for all the bullshit that has come out about him, he had this, like, really funny bit where he was like, I mean, I it's great being a white man. I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's awesome. You know? And it's just, like, recognizing that. And, like, I understand. I feel like it would be really, if all of a sudden, you know, I woke up tomorrow and I was a minority ethnically,
mm-hmm.
I would just be like, what the fuck? And I would just be like, no, take me back to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this at all. But like at the same time, so I had, like, that's
just
the thing
of
is
how
that,
you're treated.
Right.
Yeah.
And And it just, for me, it gives me so much more respect for, you know, marginalized people. Because right. I'm only sort of marginalized because I'm, you know, I'm a woman. Yes. I don't know where I'm going.
Anyway.
With this, but basically, fuck yeah. incels. But, that's the good comedic question, is what happens to an incel when they have sex? Do they get to be incels anymore?
No.
But they still have their hatred of women and stuff.
Yeah, then they're just men's rights activists.
But that's the thing, is like they don't get to be incels.
No, they're very proud of that identity. Like that's a thing that they stand
Which
by.
Then it's like, is it involuntary at this point? Because you take so much of your identity from being celibate that, a woman had sex with me.
I think then they would have a new identity crisis. Yeah.
It's not that, it's just not hard to get laid if you're a nice person.
Yeah, but nice is, like, different in the 1950s versus now. And that's where they want to be. They want to be in the 1950s.
In the 1950s, women wouldn't have sex with you until they got married. Or it was more common. That's a total lie to say women didn't have sex with you. But, like, it was more understood if a woman was like, nope, not till we're married. But, like, now people would be like, what?
I know.
But, like, back then, you had to marry someone to fuck them. So... theoretically.
Yep. One of the main reasons I wanted to talk about that was that's something that I have been thinking about and sort of inundated with this week because of Handmaid's Tale and because I read those articles. And then the person who I found, who I'm going to talk about this week, deals with a lot of this stuff.
Really?
And so, and it shaped who she was in a big way. All right.
Who are you going to tell me about today, Hannah?
I'm going to tell you about somebody who... So, it doesn't quite fit into the Asian...
All right.
It doesn't quite fit into the Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
But
I'm going to talk to you about a Chinese woman who is considered China's Joan of Arc.
Oh, so, it does and it doesn't, because it's more about American, Asian American.
Yes, Asian American.
But you're talking about an Asian woman, so yes. She probably has ancestors here in this country.
Exactly.
Descendants. Yeah. Whoa. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So.
China's Joan of Arc. Is mm-hmm. it Mulan?
It is not Mulan, however.
Because she was real, right?
She was real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, okay. So I'm going to read you this little blurb from a New York Times article, which I will link to in the show notes. But I really just, I liked the way they introduced her and worded this whole thing. So, with her passion for wine, swords, and bomb making. Yes. Chu Jin, which I apologize if I'm butchering that name. It's spelled Q-I-U. And then her last name is J-I-N. So, again, I apologize, but bear with me. So Chu Jin was unlike most women born in late 19th century China. As a girl, she wrote poetry and studied Chinese martial heroines like Hua Mulan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that Mulan.
There she is.
There she is. Fantasizing about one day seeing her own name in the history books. But her ambitions ran up against China's deeply rooted patriarchal society, which held that a woman's place remained in the home. Mm-hmm. Undeterred, Chu rose to become an early and fierce advocate for the liberation of Chinese women, defying prevailing Confucian gender and class norms by unbinding her feet, cross-dressing, and leaving her young family to pursue an education abroad. Throughout her life, Chu wrote often...
You said she was in the 1800s?
19th century? Late 1800s, early 1900s.
Great!
Yeah. Throughout her life, Chu often wrote of what she saw as China's stifling gender roles, as seen in this passage from a 1903 poem. My body will not allow me to mingle with the men, but my heart is far braver than that of a man.
Ooh.
At the time of the poem's writing, China was an empire in distress. The Qing, Q-I-N-G, I know I'm never going to get that right, but the Qing government was on its last legs, heaving under the weight of internal bureaucratic decay and external pressure from foreign powers.
Hmm.
So, with that, we jump in. Chu Jin was born in 1875 to a wealthy family, and she received an excellent education, as was typical for a young woman of her position. She loved to write, and early on, she developed her voice as a poet. She wrote happy poems on subjects ranging from flowers to the seasons. to historical places and domestic activities. She also wrote about female heroes and warriors from Chinese history.
Yeah.
In inspiring poems about their strength, their courage, and their beauty. One of her poems begins, "Don't tell me women are not the stuff of heroes." Her poetry reflected her self-confidence and desire to become an excellent female writer as valued by traditional Chinese culture. But in 1894, at the age of 19, her father arranged her marriage to the son of an influential, wealthy official with whom she had two children. Chu was not happy in her marriage. Her husband indulged in frivolous pastimes and could not understand her restlessness, quote unquote, and was frustrated by her insistence to promote feminism and reforms, something he called the affairs of men. Reforms, politics and reforms,
got
all
it.
That.
Got it.
Chu wrote of her husband, "That person's behavior is worse than an animal's. He treats me as less than nothing." And she said, "When I think of him, my hair bristles with anger. It is absolutely unbearable." Her previous self-confidence was shaken, and her dreams of becoming a recognized poet were abandoned. Her poetry from this period of her life was full of self-doubt and loneliness. And there are a few articles I found that had, like, lots of her poetry, so I will link to some of those in the show notes. Because she wrote poetry throughout her life. Like, she didn't stop writing poetry at any point. She was so unhappy with him that she once sought a divorce, even though there was no such thing in China back then.
But she was like, fuck it, I'm
gonna
try. She
was like, fuck this so hard. I am so tired of this man. I'm done with him.
Can we please not be married anymore?
Like, somebody just fucking rescue me, please. So during this period, Chu also began writing poetry about current events and the fate of China. After hearing of events such as the Boxer Rebellion and the occupation of Beijing, she used her poetry with allusions to heroines of the past to express her concern about the fate of China and Chinese women. She longed to serve her country, but realized that that wasn't possible as long as she was trapped in a conventional married life. Her unhappy marriage was an important catalyst in her development as a feminist and a revolutionary.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so that was why one of the reasons why I wanted, obviously, to talk about this whole idea of, like, enforced monogamy, because that, the fact that she was trapped in this marriage that was so horrifying, made her a fucking feminist. You know?
I mean, she clearly was before, but it made it stronger.
Yeah, it amped her desire up to the point where she actually made moves to do something about it. So in 1903, Chu Jin moved with her husband to Beijing, where he had purchased an official post. For her, life in the imperial city was decidedly less dull. She struck up friendships with like-minded women and began to take an interest in China's political affairs. She unbound her feet.
So they had been bound before.
Yeah, so they were bound for most of her life.
Jesus, that sounds terrible.
Foot binding is one of the most horrific things. I went to, there's a museum in Toronto when I lived there. It's a shoe museum, literally just a shoe museum. And they have an entire exhibit, or at least they did at the time, dedicated to the shoes that Chinese women wore when their feet were bound. And they were obscenely small, and they were shaped oddly because obviously your feet deform.
Yeah.
You know, when your foot is bound.
But how big were they?
Tiny. Child, like baby shoes. Tiny, tiny baby shoes. I mean, it's disgusting. Women couldn't walk. Women often had to be
literal hobbling.
Carried around.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's the richer you were, the tighter your feet were bound. Because the fact that you couldn't walk was seen as a sign of your wealth.
Because you could afford to have people come carry.
Yes.
God, I can't imagine. Can you imagine trying to make my feet that tiny?
It's crazy, right?
I have giant feet.
Well, your feet would have been bound from the time you were born. So your foot would literally be bent in half.
No, thank you.
You would be walking on your toes, bent underneath.
Nope.
To touch your heel.
What?
Yes.
That's how that worked?
Yeah, it would deform your feet so that your toes would curl under, and you basically your foot would be grown / bent in half.
So the top of your foot would be the bottom of your foot.
It was, like, impossible to walk around.
Because, no, yes. Thank you. I have hard enough time in yoga classes where you have to stretch out your toes. Have you done this? Where you're basically sitting, it's fine. Where you're sitting, hold on, I'll try and show you because I can't describe it. Where you're on your knees and your toes are underneath you like this, and you have to sit back as far as you can on your toes and stay there to stretch out your big toe. It's painful as hell. Yeah. And that alone.
Well, and obviously, like, not every woman's foot was bound that tightly. Like, again, if you couldn't.
But bound at all.
But bound at all.
Any way you want to take my foot and make me. Because then they were, like, walking like this.
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you.
Yep.
No to all of this.
Yep.
No to all of it.
That's how she felt. So she unbound her feet,
yes.
drank copious amounts of wine, and began experimenting with cross-dressing and swordplay.
Fun!
She started reading feminist writings and became very interested in women's education. So, in the summer of 1904, Chu, then 28, acted on a bold desire. She left her husband and her two children, she sold her jewelry, and she sailed for Japan.
Shit.
Yeah, she wrote several poems on the journey there, which I didn't include in here because they're long.
Must have been so hard.
But I mean, yeah, these poems describe this feeling of just being, you know, ripped in two because she's leaving her family, not the husband necessarily, but her children.
Yeah.
And she's doing this thing that is so unbelievably scary because women didn't do these things at the time.
What was her safety net? Where was she going to land?
So she began studying at a school in Tokyo for Chinese students, where she went to student meetings and she gave lectures on feminism and revolution, and she spoke out against the practice of foot binding. Together with other students, she set up a feminist group to call for more rights to women, which was an almost unheard of idea in her own country. Obviously, Japan was a little bit more far along, but I mean, it was still the early 1900s, so
yes,
everything
so
was very...
feminism in general was
yes.
at its very early stages.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Everywhere, all over. But she started to wear men's clothes regularly, and a historian...
Just
because? Because it was freeing. I don't think it was a queer thing. It wasn't...
She's just like, I can move in this.
She's like, I can fucking wear pants, and it's great, you know? And the foot binding was such a big thing for her because it had restricted her most of her life. So this idea of wearing men's clothing, obviously, was, like, hugely freeing.
Yeah.
So a historian, and again, I'm going to butcher this name, and I'm sorry, Zhang Lifan, who is a writer and historian in Beijing, she said, Chu Jin lived at a time when women in China were not permitted to venture out of their homes, let alone participate in public affairs. So the fact that Chu Jin not only participated in politics, Chu Jin not only participated in politics, her actions alone were a rebellion.
Yeah.
Just clearly. Going out and talking about it.
Yeah.
During her studies in Japan, her poetry also gained attention, and one of her most celebrated poems articulates her bold vision that women are equal to men in their personal and political ambitions. She says, although I was not born a man, my will is, however, much stronger than theirs.
Yeah, because she was born a woman.
Damn straight. So, returning to China in 1905, she joined... every article I read named the group that she joined up with differently. They all said a different group. So I just picked one because they were all different. But
sure.
This one says she joined the Triads, which now... Yeah, I know. Is an underground society and now a transnational crime syndicate. Whatever. The point is that in 1905, they advocated for the overthrow of the Qing dynasty. So she started the short-lived Chinese Women's Journal, which, unlike most feminist magazines at the time, used vernacular language to appeal to a broader audience on topics like the cruelty of foot binding and arranged marriages.
Was she still in Japan at this time?
She returned to China.
Got it. I missed that.
No worries.
Ugh.
That's where the Triads were, is in China.
In China. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and they still are to this day. Chu-jin wrote about how the traditional family structure was oppressive to women. She fought for a modernized China, one in which women could fully participate as citizens. And she also learned how to make bombs.
Like you do.
As you do. Don't you know? By 1907, Chu had been recruited to run the, again, I'm going to butcher this name, Datong School, which was, it looked like a practical school for girls, but it was a front for a group that recruited and trained young revolutionaries.
She taught them how to make bombs?
She taught them how to make bombs.
Shit.
She taught them, they did military drills, and she taught them swordplay.
What?
Yes.
My God.
Yeah. So at this time, Chu
bad
was...
Bad bitch indeed.
She was such a bad bitch, dude. She was so amazing. She was just like, I'm not going to fucking compromise for anything. And I'm going to fight for what I want, and I'm going to teach other people to fight for what they want.
Shit.
Yeah. So at this time, Chu was working with her cousin, Xu Shilin, to unite and train fellow revolutionaries who also believed that China needed a Western-style government. So on July 6th, which is Ben's birthday, on July 6th, 1907, Xu was caught and tortured for information before an uprising the revolutionaries had scheduled.
That makes sense.
He was executed the next day.
Wait, who was?
Her cousin that she was working with to plan some uprisings.
Some uprising bomby shit.
Mm-hmm. So Chu-jin learned about her cousin's death and the failed uprising a few days later. Aww. She was warned that officials would be coming for her at the school, but she stayed anyway, writing to her sword sister, which I don't actually know what that means. I should have looked that up.
I think that in context it makes sense.
But, you know, yeah, to her sword sister, Xu Yunhua, that she was determined to die for the cause. On July 13th, Chu was arrested, and even after being tortured, she refused to talk about her involvement in the scheduled uprising. But incriminating evidence was found at the school. On July 15th,
I mean,
yeah, like bombs. They're making
there
bombs.
Was, yeah,
there.
Yeah. She was doing things that would incriminate her in this specific situation.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So 2 days later, Chu-jin was beheaded publicly.
Fuck!
In her home village of Shanyin at the age of 31.
What?
Yep.
Wow, I did not know that that's where that was going.
I mean, Joan of Arc.
Oh, yeah, you're so, right. You warned me, and I didn't even take that.
Yeah.
That...
Yeah, I won't end it there. I'll give some, like, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, shocked by the brutal execution of a woman, many Chinese people were strengthened in their resentment of the Qing dynasty. Chu-jin immediately became a national hero. She was the subject of poetry, drama, and numerous works of fiction, and much of her writing, including her poetry and letters to family and friends, were published after her death.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. 3 years later, the Qing dynasty and the imperial system... in China, period, fell once and for all.
Wait, how long after?
3 years.
Okay. I thought you said 3 days for a second. And I was like, fuck, that was fast.
3 years. But it fell. It finally fell. She was working with, and I can't remember his name, I didn't put it in here, Sun something, but he was like the key revolutionary who she was working with, and he kind of like finally orchestrated the final, you know, undoing of this dynasty. Of the imperial system, period. So while the communist government that rose in the wake of a second revolution in 1949 was probably not quite what Chu had in mind, she fought against an oppressive system and helped other women find their place in that battle as well. So more than a century after her death, many Chinese people still visit her tomb beside Westlake in Hongshu, to pay their respects to the woman now embedded in the national consciousness as a bold feminist heroine. In the years since her martyrdom, she's become known as the Woman Knight of Mirror Lake.
That's cool.
Yep. And she is sometimes colloquially known as China's Joan of Arc.
What a fucking badass.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are a lot of stories, too, when I was researching her. There are so many women... from that time, who did fucking amazing things. There is also, there's a group of, there's a brothel that is sort of remembered for making bombs and housing and creating revolutionaries.
Did they ever actually set off any of these bombs? They just made them just in case?
I think they were setting them off.
All right.
I think they were doing stuff with them.
Wow.
But yeah, she inspired a fuck ton of people. And she...
So let that be a lesson to Peterson and his clan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, if you do this, expect revolution and bombs.
And bombs. Yep.
I won't make them, but...
Somebody's gonna
do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
You encourage that sort of thing, violence comes out of it.
That's right. You want to oppress one person, like one side of your people to...
More than half of the human population, because women are like, what, 52%?
Yeah. You think you're going to do that? Like, expect fucking consequences, dude.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's
so
awesome.
that is Chu Jin, yeah.
Well, she had kids. Surely her descendants are carrying on her.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't actually know what happened to them. I don't know if she ever really saw them again, because I couldn't find anything about her going back to her kids or anything like that. I don't know. But, yeah.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, man.
That was a ride.
I know.
I can't believe that I did not expect her to die in the end.
The Woman Knight of Mirror Lake is just such a lovely, I don't know.
Yeah.
A lovely way of remembering her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was a
fucking badass
revolutionary who helped take down the imperial system.
Fuck.
Piece by piece, and helped inspire other people to continue that work.
To do the same.
Yep. Speaking of Joan of Arc.
You have another...
I have some On This Day in Histories.
What? So it's May 30th?
It's May 30th.
May 30th.
Yep. And last week, you told us about how Joan of Arc was captured.
Yeah.
So on this day, May 30th, 1431, 19-year-old Joan of Arc is burned at the stake.
So that must have been a week later.
Uh-huh.
Wait, did I say 1431? I think I said 1430. It must have been a year and a week.
Oh yeah. So yes.
She was imprisoned for a while.
Yes, she was imprisoned. And then, yeah, this today is when she was burned at the stake. Which, of course, when I looked that up after I had done all my research on Chu Jin, I was like, holy shit, that's kind of
significant.
Spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's that. And then in 1842... John Francis attempts to assassinate Queen Victoria.
Nice try, bro.
So that's cool.
Didn't work out.
there really weren't a ton that I found, but so this one I thought was interesting. In 1925, in China, protests erupt against the great powers infringing on Chinese sovereignty.
Oh.
So in 1911 to 1949, China was in this really weird, rocky place because 1911 was when the Qing Dynasty fell.
Right.
The imperial system fell entirely. And all of these, like, warlords started cropping up and taking over all over China. And so that was why communism came into play in 1949, because they were like, we got to get this shit under control.
Like, somebody's got to take charge.
Yeah. So in 1925, like, China was in a really precarious place. So anyway. And this one is cheating a little bit because it happened yesterday, but I thought it was cool. In 1943, Rosie the Riveter by Norman Rockwell appears on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post.
Oh, on May 29th?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, I cheated a little bit, but I thought it was cool.
Rosie the Riveter, man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
There's a poster done for when I did Taming of the Shrew that was set in the 40s, and it's technically a poster that's supposed to be of me as Rosie the Riveter.
Oh.
Like somebody illustrated it.
Oh.
Doesn't exactly look like me, but it's like a redheaded Rosie the Riveter.
Oh, yeah.
And my character was dressed in a blue jumpsuit in the first scene with a red bandana.
I love it.
It was great.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks, Han.
Thank you.
Oh, hell yeah.
What are you excited about this week?
Well, okay. So, by the time this episode airs, it will have been weeks. But it's still something that I'm super into and can briefly touch on because it's not that significant. But so, like, HBO TV on Sunday nights has become my big TV watching night. Usually they have their good shows on, like, their big hyped shows on Sundays. But there was a while there where it'd be like Westworld, then Silicon Valley, then Barry,
Damn.
Then John Oliver, all in a row.
Lord.
And I was like, fuck, I watch all of these shows. So last week, oh, there you go. Last week, well done. They, last week being, by the time this episode airs, it'll be like 3 weeks. But they did the finales of both Silicon Valley and Barry, which I thought Barry was a really great.
Oh, I want to see that.
It's really fascinating. And there are a couple of like really cool breakout performances. And it's, as a person who works in the entertainment field, it's like a big roasting of a lot of LA culture and being an actor and stuff like that. But Silicon Valley finished, and that show this season was just absolutely phenomenal. And I was slightly worried in a very unfortunate way because TJ Miller, who was one of the main characters in the show previously, who was kind of one of the breakouts from the show, like he was one of the reasons the show was so funny, was fired because he's a piece of shit. He's a Coloradan too, which is kind of unfortunate.
Fuck, TJ.
But he's like a Coloradan bro type. Like he's an asshole, but he was one of the funniest parts of the show. And this season, the writers like really stepped up and in his absence, the show still works so well. And that's great. And I think that should be a sign to other people. Like if you have problematic people in your casts and in your crews and all this stuff, you shouldn't be afraid of getting rid of them and opening it up. Because I mean, to me in TJ's like hole that he left, they really stepped up and developed Zach Woods' character. And Zach Woods is fucking hysterical on that show.
So
and
funny.
He's great. He's such a funny fucking dude. So weird and like...
Yeah.
And he just comes in with these zingers that are really unexpected. And they're allowing kind of the backstory of his character really start to shine through. And it's just... You can tell that there's kind of the breath of fresh air on the show now that the dickhead is gone.
It's so fascinating.
So it's great.
I'm glad.
And I've enjoyed it. And I recommend you watch it. It's good. Even though it's a very sausage festy kind of show. But the tech world is super sausage festy. So.
Yeah.
And these are dudes who theoretically could be heroes to incels.
Oh, God.
Do you know what I mean? To tie it all back in. Because they're like nerds who don't get laid easily. And that's except for a Guilfoyle. Oh, Jared fucks, right. That guy fucks.
Well, good. I'm glad that's exciting you.
Yeah, it's nothing too exciting, but
you know what? In our world, in this day and age,
you take your little things where you can get them. Because again, the onslaught of bullshit
just
continues, and anything that makes you feel happy.
All right. Peace out, witches.
Bye. Have a good one. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Thank you for listening.
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Blueberry, and more.
Basically anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Mm-hmm. If you like our podcast, it would be really helpful if you could please like and subscribe, rate and review, share with your friends on social media, word of mouth, all of that. It's great.
Yes, and you can find us on Twitter at GWBB Podcast. Instagram is the same, and we are on Facebook under Good Witches, Bad Bitches Podcast.
And hey, guess what? If you want to hear all of our episodes, they are all up at our website, gwbbpodcast.com.
If you have a story about a woman in your life that you want to share with us and that you want us to share on our podcast at some point, you can email us at gwbbpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey guys, you know what? If you like what you hear, maybe please consider a little bit of supporting us financially by visiting our tip jar. The link is in the show notes. Every little bit helps. It just kind of makes it so that we can keep this going so that it has some longevity. So just think about it. See how you feel about it.
Or you can support this podcast directly by buying us a coffee on
our Ko-fi.
So that is ko-fi.com/GWBB podcast. Coffee start at $3 because that's generally the price of a fancy coffee, and it just helps us keep the ship going. Good Witches, Bad Bitches is produced by Moonbounce and powered by Pinecast.
Boom, boom, boom.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for listening.